Hey guys, what's up? It is week 334, and I just kind of want to let you guys know that I've seen a couple channels kind of disappear, get completely taken off YouTube. So there might be a come a time when I'm gone. So follow me on Instagram, follow me on Spotify, Anchor, and everything like that, and hopefully I can continue to go on there. Otherwise, if there's not much of a push or anything like that, I'm not going to restart my channel and restart from scratch and everything like that. Hopefully I can gain some sort of fan base on Anchor and everything like that. There's videos on there and Spotify, so follow me on there, please. And Wasteland is this weekend. I'll have an update next week. Maybe I'll shoot some footage. I'm only going for Saturday and staying into Sunday, so it's not going to be a long crazy escapade like last time, so it'll be much more chill than the last video, although just as shaky considering the fact that the cameras I use really are not supposed to be run around handheld. My ADHD also keeps me from staying still. Let's hop into the reviews, and we have a crazy one to start this out with, a nice box set that's getting some traction. I'm excited to see these get a release. These are the first 4Ks that Troma put out. Now I know that Troma has been kind of like letting their films get picked up, but just distributed a little bit by Vinegar Syndrome. They do a nice remaster for stuff like Night Beast, and then that would pop up on Blu-ray from Troma. Same thing with Combat Shock from Severin. So they pop up kind of as a release later down the line, but originally they're put out by Severin or Vinegar Syndrome or something like that. So Vinegar Syndrome didn't handle this remaster, but I think that there's definitely some people behind the scenes helping out on this remaster here for Troma. And this is the Toxic Avenger 4K box set. This is all four of the films. Now the TV the cartoon series isn't in here, the Toxic Crusaders or anything like that, but we have the original Toxic Avenger from 1984. We have the sequel Toxic Avenger Part 2, and then we have Toxic Avenger Part 3, The Last Temptation of Toxie, and then final Citizen Toxie, the Toxic Avenger 4. Now, all four of these are directed by Lloyd Kaufman and Michael Herz. I'm not sure if Michael Herz actually touched the fourth one or not, but let's start where it all began. The history of Toxic Avenger is crazy. Troma Films, they obviously were around before the Toxic Avenger. Lloyd Kaufman and company were making sex films, and as they progressed making films more in the future, they heard that the horror film was dead. So he decided to make some sort of action cult superhero hybrid nonsense insanity. And what was born was, of course, the original, the untouchable Toxic Avenger 1984. And this movie right here is a vastly important film into independent cult cinema. When you think a lot of times of independent cinema, you think, Troma. And there's stuff that you think Full Moon a little bit, but Troma is just so independent and just crazy. And I think anybody that made films or watched a lot of independent films growing up, they have an admiration for Troma. And I'm one of them, of course. I love Troma. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Toxic Avenger Part 1. So this one kind of had the deal where it was kind of lightning in a bottle. It was incredibly violent. It was a superhero film. It was kind of unlike any other. It had a strange absurdity, a strange over-the-top quality about it. And this is just kind of a unique film. Right place, right time, and one of a kind for what it was. So this movie also takes place in a health spa, kind of the health kick kind of going on. And if you listen to Lloyd Kaufman talk on commentaries and this commentary and other things like that, he was always somebody that, it's kind of weird that I'm going to say this, but you have to know good taste to be able to make a really great bad taste movie. And that's Lloyd Kaufman. I know that John Waters is king of that, right? If John Waters wasn't well-versed in classic cinema and literature and things like that, and what is supposedly, good taste, he wouldn't be able to make movies that are so good in bad taste. And that's Lloyd as well. If you watch a lot of his films, they reflect Shakespeare. They reflect a lot of the times. And they always are, socially, there's a lot of social satire in his films. Right in your face a lot of times, and other times a little bit more hidden. And in the 80s and 90s, especially in the early 90s when I was growing up, there was the whole thing about toxic waste, about the pollution environment, all this stuff. So it hit in a perfect spot, right? And then again, he talks about having that health craze, that health of everybody working out and all these kind of things like that. And two horror films would come out after this, like Killer Workout in 86 and Death Spa 88, 87, kind of deal that had the backdrop of the Hell Spa, that crazy idea of taking care of yourself, that the narcissism in that too as well. So it follows the story of Melvin Junko, a 98-pound weakling. So he lives in Tromaville, and he's basically a mop boy at the Hell Spa. And there's a group of bullies led by Bozo. And what they do is they bully and pick on Melvin until they cause him to have a horrific accident where he falls into a vat of toxic waste. And according to Bozo, he's faking it, Julia. He's faking it. Of course, he is not. He ends up transforming into this monstrous, deformed, you know, creature of superhuman size and strength. They do the hilarious idea, right, where Toxic Avenger talks, and he's clearly, like, dubbed over post, and he's like, "What's up, guys?" He's got this, like, really classy adult voice. It is kind of hard to take Melvin, right? Melvin is this 98-pound weakling, like we said, and he's really annoying and kind of grossy, nerdy stereotype. You feel bad for him, but he's also gross and silly. And then when you see the Toxic Avenger, what he's grown into, they do remind you that he is Melvin throughout the films, but it's hard. It's hard to think that's Melvin, you know, especially after the Toxic Avenger becomes such a likable and lovable character. So what happens is, this is not explained until the sequels, of course, his Traumatons, where he must fight evil. He, in the first film, he kind of looks after these villains, these bullies that are going around and running kids over for points in a horrifically graphic scene in the beginning. You kind of see that. Infamous head-crushing scene here. Supposedly a cantaloupe is used. Maybe it is. I would take influence from that for Slimy Little Bastards with a watermelon. Not as good as Trauma, though. It did not look as good as Trauma. So, Melvin, or Toxic Avenger, goes around and starts trying to kill these bullies. And he kind of runs across a bunch of really horrible villains around the city. And it's like this over-the-top, like, crazy, ridiculous villain characters. Like, Cigar Face is one of them who pops up in all four movies in Trauma's War. And then, of course, it's all led, you know, the big head honcho villain in here is the mayor. Pat Ryan, he's in on it. Mayor Belgoody. And now Pat Ryan is kind of a cult genre actor. You'll see him in stuff like Eat and Run. Of course, the other kind of Trauma classic from early, Class of Nukem High. And then even one of my personal favorites, Street Trash. Get out of my yard, you bum. He has a small little role in stuff like Fighting Back with Tom Skerritt. Pat Ryan is kind of one of my favorite little kind of small little character actors. He's great in this. In fact, all the side characters and background characters in Trauma films, and especially their early stuff like Toxic Avenger, are just super entertaining and weird and bizarre, and they just have this sense of craziness. There is nothing like a Trauma movie. There's nothing like a Traumaville citizen. And they really cast really in the most bizarre, crazy way. So what happens is Toxic Avenger rips and tears and crushes and kills a bunch of people as comedy and nudity and sex ensue. Soundtrack is great. Your body talks. That song will be stuck in your head forever. It just has a certain style, a certain quality about it that is wholly unique. It was lightning in a bottle for the time. And I absolutely love the movie. It was a favorite growing up. It was heavily influential for me. Trauma always was, you know, I always had a soft spot for it. And pretty much all the stuff that Lloyd directed, including stuff like the Toxic Avenger films, Terra Firma, Poltergeist, Romeo and Juliet, and Return to Nukem High, Class of Nukem High, Return to Nukem High 2. I've enjoyed all his stuff. You know, now every Trauma movie I love. And that includes mostly the stuff that distributed. But as far as the stuff that Lloyd directed, I've always liked it quite a bit. But yeah, Toxic Avenger is a fucking classic. There's a bunch of features on here, including, you know, director commentary and cast commentary. Now, I think some of the cast interviews are new, but there's a lot of old stuff ported over. In fact, most of the features are old stuff. There's a new intro by Lloyd, of course. He always does those. But a lot of the stuff is just old kind of interviews, you know, with Cigar Face and Robert Pritchard and stuff like that. But there's commentaries with a lot of different people, including the director's commentary, which may be new. It's hard to remember when a lot of these were recorded, because, I mean, this movie's been on VHS, DVD, Blu-ray, and, of course, 4K. It looked pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. I was worried. You know, these are low budget movies. I don't really know how HDR. They do all have HDR. Was gonna look. There's a 2-point mix. There's no new 5.1 shot studio or whatever. You know what I mean? Sometimes movies just don't really work well with those, or they don't take the time to do them. But the sound was pretty good. The visuals look good. I mean, this movie's look really solid. And, you know, a lot of, I think Lloyd's, almost all Lloyd's movies are shot on film. Even, I think, his later stuff and some of the stuff you wouldn't think. So glad Toxic Avenger 4 was shot on film and not, like, crappy digital. Maybe I'm wrong, but I really don't think it was. And it's funny because it looks better now than a lot of the movies that came out that were shot on digital or bigger budget. So, yeah, it looks really great. It sounds solid. There is scenes, inserts. You can obviously tell that were filmed at lower quality. Kind of the bit rate is not perfect. And that's not the Blu-ray or 4K. I mean, it's not the 4K. It is actually the film itself. This has a Blu-ray and a 4K in there. Most of the features are on the Blu-ray. Like I said, mostly old features. Unfortunately, you know, the packaging doesn't have the features on there, so I can't remember absolutely everything that was in there, but there's a good handful of stuff. Toxic Avenger looks great in 4K. I recommend picking it up if you're a big fan. I didn't notice any Toxic Crusader episodes on any of the Blu-rays, but maybe I'm wrong. I didn't get the deep dive into all the features like I would have liked to, but you know, Toxic Avenger 1's a classic. It looks really great. Patrick Kilpatrick's in here. It's an early role for him. That's really excellent to see him. Obviously, he would go on to have a really kind of strong career as you know, a goon and kind of a heavy in a lot of movies, including A Scanner, Cop 2, Best of the Best 2, but more bigger films like, I guess, Eraser and Death Warrant and things of that nature, Last Man Standing, Minority Report. A really good character actor. Always enjoyed him. And there is a great amount of action in these movies. This is a superhero movie, and for my money, it's probably my favorite superhero movie once I sit back and think. This, Darkman, all the stuff that really shouldn't be a superhero movie, like, you know, stuff that's kind of independent from, like, the big studios, I always enjoyed. So, yeah, great stuff. Now we're going to dive into The Toxic Avenger Part 2, yes, on 4K as well, HDR. And this one, you know, it's been a long time since I watched this one, and I'm not going to lie, I've watched the first one tons and tons of times. I watched the fourth one, Citizen Toxie, a bunch of times when it came out. It was kind of a staple that I would show my friends just because it was so crazy and bonkers. I can't believe I've been with those movies since I was, you know, 12, 13 years old. It's really kind of crazy. But so Toxic Avenger 2 is one I watched maybe once or twice, and I didn't have the same attachment to it. This was made in 89. It's an hour and 48 minutes. Now, I did not remember it being that long. You know, I always remembered Part 2 and 3 kind of being these movies that were like two relatively shorter films that I felt were like one big movie that they cut in half because they're shot back to back. But I really don't think that's the case here because they're such long films. They're almost 2 hours apiece. So the Toxic Avenger 2, now we changed some things. Instead of it being Sarah, his girlfriend, is now Claire, his blind girlfriend, which I didn't mention in the first film. Bad on you, Dave. So Toxic Avenger is living in Tromaville, and he's cleaned up the city, and he's kind of a little depressed and a little out of place. There's bad guys that come in, Apocalypse Incorporated, and they want to get rid of the Toxic Avenger, of course, but they realize they can't take him out. They've developed some sort of kind of crazy kind of science in Japan that will take out Toxic Avenger and turn his traumatons. So they have this whole big scheme to get Toxic Avenger to go to Japan. Now, there's a great moment in the beginning of the film where the bad guys send a horde of henchmen after him. Now, you'll notice that the henchmen are both in Part 2 and 3, and they play multiple different roles. But the villain is some sort of, you know, supernatural entity as we get to the third one. It's kind of fairly obvious that they are this big, giant, conglomerate corporation that's supposed to represent, you know, Hollywood and the evils of society, all that kind of stuff, right? And Toxic Avenger is the hero for the little people, as they say. So, anyways, all these goons just keep popping up randomly in different spots, and Toxie tears them apart. They're absolutely ridiculous. They're all, like, nonsensical, most absurd things you can think of. Like a Native American guy who's not really Native American. And there's even Michael Jai White is in here. And it's so funny watching Michael Jai White in this, in both films, season 2 and 3, in the background. And when he fights, because he is so much more advanced than everyone else in terms of acting and, like, martial arts, not that any of the acting's really horrible in this, but it has a sense of style, you know, it's a trauma movie, but he's so much better than everybody else. Like, he's really selling it. You can tell he's like, you know, oh, that guy's going to be famous. That guy's going to go places with it in his life, you know? And I've always liked him. And pop it up in movies. He's a martial artist or a film action star. I don't want to say martial artist exactly. You know, he's like an action kind of guy. I'm not sure on his level of martial arts ability. You know, he seems to know what the fuck he's doing, so I'll leave it at that. Yeah, he's great in this, and all the goons are in here. You see Joe Flyshaker, who's a Troma regular, pops up in tons of their movies. Very familiar, very funny. But Toxic Avenger's played by a different guy. It's no longer Mitch, I think Cohen is his name. It's a new guy who plays in 2 and 3, and he's good. He's funny. I love that Toxic Avenger actually goes to Japan. And one thing that the Toxic Avenger films always kind of carry on is there's crazy, really kind of unique and interesting kills, right? In the first one, we have the taco kind of scene where all the characters are killed with taco kind of implements in a fast food restaurant. Somebody gets turned to a milkshake. Somebody gets, you know, deep fried, all this kind of stuff like that. And in the second one, we have this scene where he basically kills this Asian, this Japanese gang. And he, like, turns one guy's nose into a fish kind of, like, thing. And he turns one guy into udon or whatever, some sort of, what is it I'm looking for? I think it's some sort of, like, thing like that. Or Haifeng ramen or something. It's crazy. And it's just complete nonsense. Like, it's so Japanese. And the idea that Toxic Avenger is killing people in this absurd way really feels Japanese. Because when you watch it, like, some of the weird kind of style of Japanese films at this time, the late 80s, early 90s, it fits this aesthetic that Toxic Avenger would be here, that he'd be ripping people apart, that you're like, what is this? I don't fucking know. It feels right, though. This one I really like. This one is vastly entertaining. It's hilarious. It's ridiculous. It's over the top. And it looked really solid. And what's weird is, like I said, all these movies were shot on a low budget on film. But, you know, stuff dates certain movies, like certain digital qualities. These all don't seem that dated in comparison. Like, I know they do look different. Like, if you look from the one from 84 and then 2000, they're all shot on film, and they don't look that far apart. You know, and I guess they're 16 years apart, but they don't look as far apart as that, to be honest, from 1 to 4. But 2 and 3 look definitely the most alike. They have a lot of the same cast and everything like that, a lot of the same background characters. But it is fun. And there's this great scene where the bad guy kind of standing up there and he's talking, well, what have we done? And they're like talking about all the goons are stepping up, including Cigar Face, and they're talking about how they've all created all this pollution and insanity. And there's this one guy whose delivery is so unhinged. He's like, we're dropping 200 PCBs in the ocean, which is excellent. And it's just like, I'm like, God, man, the line delivery that he must be giving these guys, the weirdest line readings. Everybody in these movies is so fucking unhinged. It's just, like I said, a certain quality, and I love it. So Toxic Avenger 2 was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed rewatching that one. Great stuff. Again, we have commentaries and all this kind of stuff. Like I said, I wish I would have got to deep dive into the features, but I really didn't get a chance. And the first one had mostly like old features on there as well. But yeah, Toxic Avenger 2, great stuff. Looked really good. HDR as well. Okay, the next one up is The Toxic Avenger Part 3, The Last Temptation of Toxie. That's right. And I should read this on the bottom of the box here, which will, if people remember, Toxic Avenger 3 on Blu-ray was cut from the United States Trumbull release. But here we have this. The original negative of The Toxic Avenger Part 2, while complete in terms of all violence and nudity, was missing several short dialogue sequences opening third, which had been removed for pacing reasons. Although no film materials for the sequences could be located in order to present the most complete version possible, three short segments were inserted from the highest quality digital master. Now, I didn't notice that in Part 2, but as far as I know, Part 3 is also uncut. So it appears that Part 3 is actually the full uncut version. And these are gory movies. Now, 3 is not nearly as gory as Part 2. Or one. Three slows down. It's almost 2 hours again, but it definitely slows down. And obviously, this is Lloyd talking about selling out to Hollywood, you know, all that kind of big corporate stuff like that. So Toxic Avenger is completely depressed now after all the events that happened in Part 2. He feels useless. You know, he can't fight crime. He just can't get a job. He's just a screw-up, and he wants to help Claire get her eye surgery so she can finally see the world. Hilariously, Apocalypse now sends him a letter to try to buy Toxie out because they can't kill him. But the funny thing is, like, does not he remember the second movie? Who cares? Whatever. So Toxic Avenger kind of gets tricked. It's definitely a devil story in here. And it's funny because the second one obviously has this character that's reminiscent of Robert De Niro in Angel Heart. And he even eats the eggs. You're like, such a weird, you know, pop culture reference at the time. And he pops up in this one as well, that character, the villain. So Toxie sold out for the huge chunk. He becomes a yuppie. There's a lot of silly dialogue. We'll do lunch. We'll do brunch and shit like that. You know, it's just very, very silly. But also at the same time, there's not enough action in this in comparison to the first two films. And a big chunk of the movie, Toxie has to kind of follow, like, go against, you know, Satan himself in this kind of five levels of hell deal or something along those lines. The bad guys are fun again. They're all around. You see a lot of the same supporting as Trumbullville citizens or as goons. I love the goons. They're all super ridiculous and super over the top and nonsensical. There is ridiculous characters throughout the movie, but there's not as much fighting in this one. This one's much less of an action film. It's much different than, it's not quite as action film as the other ones. to be brutally honest. Sorry about that. We had some camera trouble. It's more like more dramatic. Now, in the beginning, it does have a really excellent scene that takes place in a video store, which I think will be very, you know, refreshing to people. If you ever think old 80s, this one's 1989 as well. Think old, like, 80s horror movies or genre films, and you see a video store scene, it's always just like music to your eyes, I guess. That doesn't make any sense. But you know what I mean? It has, like, Dead Next Door has a scene like that. What else does? Psychos in Love has a scene like that. There's a SOV that I can't think of off the top of my head where it actually has one of the Polonia brothers in it. They're not actually directed it, but they're in it, which has a scene in a video store. And of course, there's Loaded with Trauma films. And when it comes to killing the bad guys, they're killed with implements of tapes. There's a lot of like kind of funny things in here, like mess ups, like background stuff where like you actively see like a character who's supposed to be kind of dead, or like they'll have this and then the next time they'll be in a background in a scene doing the wrong thing. There's a lot of like mess ups, but for some reason in the trauma films it just works. Like I said, now I seem like I'm coming harsh on this one, but this one's enjoyable too. It's my least favorite of the four, I'm not gonna lie. It's not quite up to snuff as the other ones, and you know, it's all right. And the recasting of Melvin is strange from the first one, but it's not horrible. And it's definitely a Satan story. And all Lloyd's movies have that kind of like classic bend to them. You know, it's funny, you know, he wasn't like one of these directors that was obsessed with horror films. His inspirations aren't typically from horror films, or his reference points when he talks about movies aren't usually from horror films. Toxic Avenger 3 also has the introduction by Lloyd and a commentary as well. So yeah, The Last Temptation of Toxie. And the final Toxic Avenger film here, The Tale of Two Toxies, Citizen Toxie, Toxic Avenger 4. Now, the opening of this movie right away tells you the story of the Toxic Avenger. And then it says, then two terrible sequels were made. This is the real sequel. And it's narrated by no other than Stan Lee. Which is funny because you know that Marvel Comics did have a short run of Toxic Avenger comics that came out from the first three movies. About a 20-issue run that I had as a kid, which is bonkers. And I should mention Toxic Avenger even had action figures, a video game, and a cartoon show. So boom, Toxic Avenger was kind of a crazy phenomenon, like I said. So when Part 4 came out in 2000, 11 years after the third film. So you know what I mean? And 16 after the first one. It was kind of crazy, honestly, and special. And I guess that I was a trauma fan at that point, a pretty hardcore fan. So when Toxic Avenger 4 came out, I bought this movie right away. And I watched it quite a bit. This is a movie I would show my friends. And now I will admit, sometimes maybe the jokes are a little too gross nowadays. Maybe they're a little too crude. Maybe they're a little too stupid. Maybe they're a little too offensive. But I'm not going to lie, when I put this in, it took me back to a time and a place. You know, this and Meet the Feebles were a couple movies that I always showed my friends just to be like, yeah, these are fucking insane and gross, right? But, yeah, it was always a funny movie. The plot is, of course, the Toxic Avenger is trying to get Sarah, now it's Sarah again, pregnant, his girlfriend, and he's trying to have a kid. What happens is, during kind of stopping the diaper mafia, that's right, the opening of this movie, the diaper mafia, we had the trench coat mafia going on here again, the diaper mafia was trying to attack the mentally handicapped school on Bring a Mexican to Lunch Day. So you can imagine trauma handling that issue. So many hot topic issues here. You have mentally handicapped people. You have, you know, Mexican people in here. And then you even have, you know, a school kind of massacre at the same time. It's just, that's a lot of fucked up shit. And it's funny, in 2000, of course, Columbine had already happened. And a lot of school shootings had happened. But they weren't up to snuff. Up to the point that we are now. Where it's like, for a while before COVID hit, it was like every week there was one or two school shootings, and it was just like, geez. And it's just crazy. Like, trauma does have its hand on the pulse, and everything like that. You know, they are ahead of the time, and they do understand social issues, and they're usually ahead, you know, on that kind of stuff and putting it in their films. But what happens is there's an explosion, and Toxic Avenger loses his sidekick in Joe Flyshaker, Lard Ass. And a hilarious scene, and he is transported to an interdimensional kind of crazy place where the version of him is called the Noxic Offender, and he's a villain, right? And he's the evil version of Toxic Avenger, and Noxic Offender is transported to Tromaville. So everybody's kind of confused here. While Toxic Avenger is in a world where he is the ruler supreme, and Noxic Offender is in the happy world of Tromaville where everyone loves him. Right away, the Noxic Offender starts killing and raping and defiling everyone around him, while the Toxic Avenger is confused and doesn't really know what's going on and get his footing. This one has a good cast in here. You'll notice Ron Jeremy as the mayor, and I think that's Goldstein, right? That is like helper in there. I think that's another like kind of porn guy, porn producer, director. I feel like his name is Al Goldstein. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a very funny scene he's in. The comedians here who do the newscasters, I can't remember those guys. They were kind of a name at the time, if I'm not mistaken. They're very funny. Their deadpan delivery, their satirical kind of nature is really good. That's good stuff. Reminds me of Paul Verhoeven or something like that in the Troma kind of style. But yeah, anyways, this is one of the most gory and offensive and ridiculous kind of movies. There's people being drugged by cars and all sorts of shit that you're just like, all you could do is shake your head. The movie has like a couple mentally handicapped people as the main characters. There's tons of gore. Trent Haga is in here. He went on to be like a writer and direct some movies as well. Trent Haga is fucking good in this. He's a goon, but he's hilarious. His delivery's perfect. He fits the Troma world perfect. James Gunn is in here. Obviously, people know who James Gunn is. Go on to be a huge DC and Marvel director, made some really great films like Super. So it's just insane the kind of people that are in this. The gore is fantastic and nasty and disgusting. It's ridiculously stupid, I'm not going to lie, but I love every second of it. There's a lot of great dialogue, and a lot of the dialogue, Troma's infamous for doing ADR where they shoot the movie and then they'll add in lines later, but some of the lines in here are really fucking funny. Where they're just like add a line in later, and he's like, it just cracks me up. But there's so many gags in here that always get me, and gags that I repeated for years afterwards. Apparently, there's not much water around Tromaville, so Dolphin Boy is pretty useless. That's a great line. The whole scene with the mad cow after he is killed, and I guess that takes care of it. I guess that takes care of it. That the whole thing, it's just kind of this like dumb humor that just brings a smile to my face. Like I said, Troma has so many weird levels of humor in it. Like one scene, you'll have grotesquely violent and disgusting dark humor. The next, you'll have like the dumbest absurd humor. And then you'll have like fart jokes and slapstick and Three Stooges style stuff. The level of humor and absurdity can only work in a Troma movie. As that make a lot of people try to capture the Troma spirit, and it never really works. I don't know how to say that. Like, it's hard to capture the Troma spirit. And I know we have a remake coming out of The Toxic Avenger directed by actor Macon Blair. Macon Blair directed the Elijah Wood film, I Don't Feel at Home in This World, which is a really good film. Macon Blair obviously starred in the Murder Party and Blue Ruin, the Jeremy Saunier movies. And I really hope that The Toxic Avenger remake is good. I don't know how it's going to be. I don't know. It's not going to be Toxic Avenger. You're going to have to... He's going to have to accept that it won't be the one you love and adore. But hey, I hope it's good. I hope it's entertaining. Elijah Wood is involved. That's a plus for me because he tends to take good projects, and it wouldn't be the first remake if it is good that he did that I thought was impressive, surprised me with the Maniac remake. So anyways, Toxic Avenger 4 is probably my second favorite of the four. And I also do have a soft spot for this one, just because it's so ridiculous, and just a special piece, place and time for this one, a special place in my heart, and a special, piece of time, when they made all these kind of crazy offensive films, in the early 2000s. And it's a weird kind of time for film, especially American film. There really wasn't that many ones that I had a fondness for at that time. If you look at 2000 in terms of genre and horror films, it's not a strong year. Toxic Avenger 4, if we're counting it as a horror film, will probably be very close to the top. So that is the Toxic Avenger box set. Quite impressive with them. They all had HDR. They all looked much better than expected because I didn't remember how they were going to clean these up, the DVDs and everything like that. But I was happy with it, and it's a nice set. Soft box, though, not a hard box. And I said that the disc in there looked good. There's a Blu-ray and a 4K of them. Not reversible cover art. And I don't like that they don't list the features on the back. Like, I can't remember every feature in the world. I'm getting old. Sometimes I can't even remember my frickin' name. But anyways, these are ABC, non-locked, the Blu-rays, and of course 4Ks aren't locked as well. So yeah. Okay, the next up is a double feature here from Film Masters. And this is two films here, The Giant Gila Monster and The Killer Shrews. Now, I've covered these before, both 1959, both directed by Ray Kellogg. Okay, so let's start with the giant Gila monster. Of course, I've covered this one before on here, but it was not a Blu-ray edition. So pop of this in. This is a very, you know, cheap movie made in Texas by a guy who worked in Texas a handful of times. Now, Ray Kellogg, they explain who he is in a special feature on here, which was much appreciated. I love the little special feature on here. What is it called? Ray Kellogg, an unsung master, a Ballyhoo motion pictures documentary written by C. Courtney Joyner and narrated by Larry Balmer. And C. Courtney Joyner, like I said a million times, is an expert on this stuff. And like hearing that kind of like the history of Ray Kellogg was super interesting, working on all the John Ford movies, including co-directing, you know, the Green Berets with John Wayne, all sorts of things. So they basically point out that Ray Kellogg was kind of known at the end of the day for these two kind of like low grade kind of B horror films or sci-fi horror films. But in reality, he cut his teeth on making a bunch of special effects for much bigger films, being co-director and all that kind of stuff. So that was a nice feature to see, right? As far as, you know, like the rest of the films themselves, they're not amazingly well done films, to be honest. But for the budget, I do think they are fairly well done. So the giant Gila monster is kind of your typical giant creature here. Now, I can't remember if it's exactly radioactivity that does it, but I'm going to assume it is. So it shares a lot of similarities to the Blob, right, in terms of, like, the people's, like, attitude towards it. We have this kind of young guy that hangs out with the younger kids. He's, like, works on cars a lot. He's struggling. He wants to help his sister kind of get, like, leg braces or whatever, fix her up so she can walk better and all this kind of stuff. A lot of money would go into that. So he's always trying to make a couple bucks. The sheriff is quite friendly towards him. And there is kind of a rich guy around the town that runs everything. He has like his factory, yada, yada, yada. In the very beginning, his son and his son's girlfriend are kind of like taken out by the monster and they completely disappear. You don't really see it. So this guy is riding the sheriff's ass the entire movie while the kids are trying to figure out what the hell happened. And before long, you know, the drunk spots the giant Gila monster as it helps derail a train. And this is kind of definitely the forced perspective, right? You make the miniatures and then it's miniatures, but you do forced perspective at times too. But for the most part, yeah, you kind of just make the miniatures and let a real Gila monster kind of walk through and trample everything like that. That's kind of what we have going for it. But yeah, it's okay. It's not a horrible film. It's enjoyable. It's not like a gratuitous film, of course, right? They obviously set up how they're going to take out the monster right away with foreshadowing. There's times when it has this almost like sweet kind of small town feel to it where everybody's kind of fairly accepting and, you know, it's not going to really be any disturbing qualities in here. But the giant Gila monster, like I said, I've covered this one before. I don't have all that much to say about it. It does have character actors in here that were in bigger things and better things most likely, but I actually prefer the other film on here, The Killer Shrews. But Giant Gila Monster is solid. It is entertaining. It's kind of exactly what you'd expect it to be. The funny thing is though, like a lot of people just live to make fun of the Giant Gila Monster and The Killer Shrews, but I don't really watch them and think they're hilariously crappy or anything. I'm just like, it's just a B movie. It's fine. I'm entertained by it. I like it. I don't really sign up for that kind of, hey, isn't this shitty? Let's laugh at it kind of deal. I don't really like doing that on purpose. Occasionally it does happen when you're watching a movie. You're like, and it's mostly just the audacity of the film itself, but I really am not a huge fan of the, hey, this sucks. Isn't it great? You know, it's like, I kind of like it in the first place. So, I mean, that's never, I've grew up for years watching these movies like this, and I've always enjoyed them to a certain point. So it's always just kind of, I guess maybe it's a defensive attitude I have of them, you know, but occasionally sometimes you do get that feeling you can't control it. But hey, I do like this. It's not perfect. It's cheap little B movie, but I like the features on here even more than the movie. That happens a lot. Okay, now we're going to talk about The Killer Shrews. Now, I had seen this one before, actually, years ago. I don't know if I ever watched the whole thing, but this one basically follows a captain who's delivering some goods to this island that's very isolated, and the scientist tells him, you know, take my daughter out of here. Some bad things happened. They can't leave the island. We got a big storm coming, and these shrews on the island have been kind of mutated, kind of deformed. You think Food of the Gods, right, where you have the giant rats. This time it's shrews. And in the beginning, they kind of hype up the shrew. It's hilarious. You're like, okay, they're hyping these shrews up. They must be really dangerous. But the shrews, of course, are just kind of like dogs in suits, kind of like they would do with Deadly Eyes from 83 later on, the Canadian kind of killer rat picture. I think they're dachshunds in that one. But so what happens is we have a group of scientists and these captain and some other survivors on this island, and they're fucking poisonous. The killer shrews end up being poisonous. So if you get bit, you're dead too. There's a lot of them. But it becomes a siege movie. It becomes Night of Living Dead 10 years before Night of Living Dead, where the shrews are trying to get in this place. There's absolutely an annoying ass character in here who just he's like Harry Cooper times 10. The guy fucks up 37 times and a half, to the point even where our lead hero kind of picks him up and is going to throw him over the fence. But everybody's like, stop, stop, stop. It's like, you should have. You should have just tossed him over right then and there. But yeah, this one, I know, again, people laugh at it, but I feel like this one has stuff that is ahead of its time. Made on a budget, made fairly well for what it is. And there's stuff in here I'm watching that I'm seeing like, well, Night of the Living Dead did that. And I know there's other movies too that probably did it too, earlier sci-fi films. Obviously, Night of the Living Dead was heavily influenced by sci-fi films, mostly I Am Legend, the novella, and A Nightmare. But you can even see like Last Man on Earth, which was based off the I Am Legend novella. There's not a lot of Night of the Living Dead takes from that and stuff like that. But I do see it in here. I do see that kind of 50s aesthetic in from that made it into Night of the Living Dead, and the plot, you know, that kind of like siege movie, and how they get out of here too. I've seen done in later movies too, with the kind of build your own tank. Tremors kind of does something similar to that, right? So as goofy and silly as they say this movie is, there's some genuine fun to be had. I actually like this one. Now, of course, a lot of the characters are stereotypical and obviously even bad for the time they were made. You know, the African American character, you're like, that's a bit rough, obviously. Not quite, obviously product of its time. Not exactly, you know, acceptable nowadays. It's just kind of stereotypical. But watching it again, you know, I always remembered it being worse when I watched it. I was like, oh, I guess it's not that bad as I remembered. But so as far as the features are, we have two different versions. You have the theatrical and the TV format on both films. So you have 1851 and 1331, and then they're both originally for the Gila Monster original restored 35mm trailer. Then we have commentary for the Giant Gila Monster by Larry Stroth, James Gonis, Sean Sheridan, and Matt Winhold from the Monster Party podcast. Archival interview with leading actor Don Sullivan by author Brian Sen. And then Killer Shrews, we have Ray Kellogg and Unsung Master, which is a great doc about Ray Kellogg, like I said. A collection of original radio spots for each film, courtesy of Gary L. Prange, and commentary for Killer Shrews by author Jason A. Nee. They're both short, they're both easy to watch, and they're both entertaining. Good double feature for sure, the Giant Gila Monster and the Killer Shrews. I enjoyed them. Check them out if you like these ones on HD, finally. I don't think there is an HD release of them in the States. So. Alright guys, let's hop into those 1981 movies.
Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell. Because through that gateway, evil will invade the world.
Thank you. a curse that'll live on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. In this little town, when the 14th comes round, there's a silence and fear in the air. Remember the morn that the legend was born, all the shock and the horror was there. Or the legend they say on a Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on and on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
All right, the first one up from 1981 is a Canadian classic, it was referred to me as, and this is Ghost Keeper. That's right. And you read the reviews on the Ghost Keeper, it's the Code Red Blu-ray. You read the reviews and they're like, Shining ripoff. And I can see that. It definitely is. So basically, all I'm going to say in the beginning before I forget this, you know, and Shining, they're like, you've always been the caretaker. And it just when I just started thinking, I was like, you've always been the Ghost Keeper. And it just cracks me up. So essentially, this is a Wendigo story, and you don't see too many Wendigo stories. Now, the first time I saw this, I thought it was okay, a little dull, a little slow. Rewatching it, I don't know if I'm getting older or just more appreciative of a lot of films. Or maybe it's just a second time watch, you know, it's two, three times watch. The familiarity of movies can, you can sense something and know what to expect and look for different things. So I really enjoyed Ghost Keeper this time around. So it's a small cast in here. We have three people on snowmobiles kind of riding through. The guy leading him is kind of a douchebag. He's got money. He's kind of a playboy. He's just not likable. He tries to, you know, talk to a lot of the locals to the point where, like, you can kind of tell they don't want to interact much, but he just keeps pushing it and asking a lot of questions. Say, you know, just stop. Just leave him alone. Like, honestly, like, so him and his girlfriend and another friend are riding these snowmobiles, and something happens where they kind of, like, break down. They kind of get isolated and lost, and there's this big kind of, this hotel out in the middle of nowhere, this lodge. So they kind of break in because they had no choice, and they're staying there, and it's really creepy. Obviously, you think The Shining, the Overlook Hotel. Very creepy, very isolated. And then later that night, the guy's attacked by this older woman. And she starts to talk to him. They realize she's staying there. She's supposed to take care of the place and everything's okay. But she's very creepy and she obviously has something against city people. And she seems very backwards and stuff. She says, I went to the city once. She's really good in this. Really kind of genuinely creepy. And obviously she's hiding something. And we kind of start to see as it goes on. Like I said, it's a Wendigo story. There's something in the cellar. Kind of in the freezer that they're feeding. And her son is there as well. And there's a couple kills in here that are one of them's pretty brutal. But they also hint at some mental illness that one of our characters has. And this started reminding me of The Sentinel, right? Where somebody's destined for something. And that kind of fit in that aspect as well. Now, I was always under the impression that a Wendigo was somebody who eats human flesh in the Canadian wilderness can become the Wendigo. This is a little bit different here, I think. But I think it's kind of unique and cool. And like I said, it's creepy. It's got a creepy kind of isolated atmosphere. Howling wind, you know, wandering around a dark hotel. This is better than I remembered. A lot better, actually. And the ending, when find somebody in the snow, I thought was really effective as well. I think the acting's really solid. I think that the kills are scary. You know, it is a very small, you know, kind of secluded horror film. Isolated, creepy, atmospheric one called Ghost Keeper. I would recommend it. As far as the special features are concerned, we have, of course, an audio commentary with writer, director Jim Mankey Chunk. Stars Reva Spire and Murray Ord. Moderated by Jeff McKay. Featurette interview with Ghost Keeper created by Jim Marduchuk. Alternate pre-credit sequence not approved by the director, which shows a murder in the beginning. It doesn't really fit the movie. But there's also an interview with the actress in here, Georgie Collins, and I like that because she talks being a character actress. She's like, I always played older, you know, and I always knew how to kind of do that thing, so it really didn't kind of bother me that I was always asked to play that kind of role. And she's probably one of the stronger performances in the film, and I really like the lead too. Kind of brings up, you know, the mental illness aspects with her and how she ends up being the one that has to fight back. And like I said, it's not a gratuitous movie, but when the kills are there, when the violence is there, it's really effective because it's not overused. So Ghostkeeper, good stuff. Another one from 1981 that revisiting, I enjoyed more. The next one up from 1981 is The Survivor. Directed by David Hemmings, right? Star of Deep Red and a slew of other movies. So he had that whole run in Australia, right? Where he was kind of like acting and directing a handful of movies in Australia. Did he direct Harley Quinn as well? I feel like he might have from 1980, maybe produced it. But The Survivor, this is actually based off a James Herbert novel. I think it is James Herbert. See, James Herbert was the guy who wrote a lot of those paperbacks from Hell, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong. But this has Robert Powell in it, who is in Harley Quinn, as Jenny Agutter in here, and Joseph Cotten. It's nice to see a Joseph Cotten in here. Now, this is one of his last films. He stopped acting in 1981, and you'll watch him in 1980 and 1981. He has a handful of horror films. So Joseph Cotten, obviously, a good kind of actor, classic horror actor. Not classic horror actor, but classic actor that turned to horror movies. He's in Baron Blood by Mario Bava, but he's good in this smaller role. Robert Powell is basically a guy who survives a plane crash, a huge plane crash. He's the only one that walks away. Everyone else dies horribly. They're burned. So there's this giant investigation. One of his friends is involved, and the head of the kind of the whole ordeal is kind of really focused on him. And there's a lot of people kind of around the plane crash that are really sleazy, right? We have photographers getting gross pictures. We have people taking watches, all sorts of shit like that. And Robert Powell almost seems haunted. He can't remember anything. And he's very confused by the whole situation. And Jenny Agutter kind of is witnesses the kind of thing in a weird kind of almost like, I guess you'll say, like psychic ability way. You know, this is the same year that we had American Werewolf in London. So she got two in 1981. American Werewolf is a much better film, of course, but it'd be hard to beat that one. So she has this kind of psychic tie to the plane crash as well. So she hooks up with Robert Powell. And they're going to figure out what the hell happened. And as they go on, some people are picked off in a supernatural aspect. And I like the idea, right? It seems like the victims of the plane crash are calling. They're calling to Robert, calling to her to try to use her as a vessel to figure out this crime. So people that kind of benefited from this plane crash start dying in weird kind of supernatural ways. Now, I would compare this to something like Final Destination. It's a different way to do it. Same as Soul Survivor from 83 by Tom Eberhorn. It's different kind of ways, right? That soul survivor of a crash. It's a good way to start a horror film. All three of those handle it a different way, right? They handle it, you know, a different way. And this one is really solid. The first act, the second act, all this stuff is really good until the ending. And it's not that it's a bad ending. It just feels rushed. You're watching the film move along, and then the last 10 minutes, you're like, that's it? It doesn't unfold like it should, I don't think. I think we're missing 10 minutes or something like this. Now, I know the writer of this did not care for this movie. He was not a fan. I don't think it's poorly directed. I think it's well shot. I think it's well acted. Robert Powell's a weird actor to me. He's good in that Harley Quinn movie because he plays like this Rasputin type. I'm not a huge fan of that movie. This one I probably like better. But Paulo is just deadpan in this, and he's kind of supposed to be. And there's obviously a twist here that's, you know, fitting for like a Twilight Zone kind of style thing, but you kind of figure that's what it's going to be. But I enjoy this one. I think it's a good looking movie. I think it has some cool qualities, some creepy atmosphere. The doll is great in here, but I don't love it. Joseph Cotten has a small role, like I said, and Jenny Agutter is good in it. It's not a perfect movie. I think that the bad guy in here is a little iffy. I think it just is like, that's it? That's what we're doing? I just don't buy it. It just doesn't work for me. But everything else I like about it. So we have Not Quite Hollywood Extended and interviews producer Anthony Iginian and cinematographer John Seal, the legacy of James Herbert, Robert Powell and James Herbert, archival TV special and location featuring interviews with stars Joseph Cotten and Peter Sumner, archival TV interviews with David Hemmings and Robert Powell. Then we have a trailer reel, extended final scene, and TV spot. So, I would recommend checking it out. It is an Australian horror film. There's more Australian horror films this year, I think, than last year. I think we only had a couple. We had, Harley Quinn and Nightmares. I think we have a couple more this time. So, yeah, that is Survivor. The Survivor. Next up is, I think it's a Golden Harvest. I don't think it's a Shaw Brothers one here from 1981. This is Dreadnought. And this is like an action martial arts. But there is a horror quality to it. And this I ordered from Eureka because it was one of the ones that got a Blu-ray release overseas, but not here yet. So yeah, wanted to pick it up for 81. So this one, I really enjoyed this one. It has a lot of familiar faces in here that you'd recognize. I got to make sure I say this actor right, because he's in like five or six movies I've already covered on here. And I feel like I constantly forget him, to be brutally honest. Where is he at? Yuen Biao. And so essentially what we have here is he's kind of this like wimpy kind of laundry guy that's supposed to collect money and everything like that. But he always gets beat up. He's always picked on. And he has kind of this brother who are, you know, brother term, you know, is it lightly? Is he actually his brother? Who always is helping him out. And he works with his sister who is tough as nails too. There's a lot of comedy aspect to this movie, to be honest. But in the opening of this film, there is this kind of traveling guy and his wife, and they're very desperate. She's pregnant, and they seem exhausted. They stop at this restaurant to kind of to eat and drink, and they notice something's wrong right away. And it's boom, all these constables try to pick him up and arrest him and his wife. They fight back. They kill a bunch of them, but his wife dies in the process, and this guy's white tiger. After that, he completely and utterly snaps. He ends up going to this town, this same village with our laundryman and all our kind of main characters in here. And he approaches an old partner of his who's a kind of a villainous character of the town. He's at odds with the other kind of like healer in here who's a good guy. So what happens is this guy says, you know, we used to be partners, but I can't promise you any shelter. You have to go. This guy, through all the pain and anguish and insanity, kind of starts to snap, and he sneaks into like the local kind of acting troupe where the people have the painted faces, and he paints his face in this kind of crazy, insane way. And he starts to attack certain people, anybody that has this bell. He hears this bell that his wife had on her. He snaps, and he starts focusing on her laundryman. But the laundryman has his buddy who's a martial artist who is directly tied in with that healer. So it starts this whole thing, right? And it ties everything together. But there's points in this one where our villain, the painted face guy, goes on these like slasher phases where he literally like cuts guys' throats with the glass, and he becomes pretty violent. Kills a couple guys urinating in the alleyway and all that kind of stuff. Definitely crosses into the horror territory. Kind of stuff like Human Lanterns a bit. Not quite as horror as Human Lanterns, but it has that same kind of style and vibe, right, where we have this character who's completely unhinged and completely insane, using martial arts to kind of run around and just kind of pick people off, right? There's a lot of weird kind of Asian, Chinese Hong Kong movies from this year, if you're looking at stuff like Kung Fu Zombie and just bizarre things, but this one is one of the better ones, I would say. You know, I like this one a lot. I think that, Bewitched, I think was vastly impressive. I was really happy with that one. I like how it handled the curses and everything. This one, I think, fits more in line with like action first, then horror. But it does have kind of the element, right, of somebody learning this technique, learning this martial arts and everything like that. And it does have an element of comedy, too. And there's a main constable in here who's played by a heavyset guy who pops up in a bunch of movies. And if I'm not mistaken, he was in the movie from a couple weeks ago. The problem with a lot of these movies is I watched tons of them, which ended in the style of The Wild Bunch from 88 Films put it out. And it was absolutely fantastic. This is my problem. I can't remember anything anymore on a lot of the new movies. Was it Magnificent Warriors, the one where like the big showdown, and he ends up running out with all the bombs and everything? He's in this one as kind of the constable. He's a very great comedic, hilarious character. The end showdown's excellent too. It's really good stuff, really good fight scenes. This one's great stuff. A lot of like shirt play where they use the clothes to fight back and tie people up. But Dreadnought was very impressive. I think that most people would really like this one. This is very entertaining, good characters, good action. I actually really like this one. I think people should check it out. As far as the special features, we have optional English dubbed audio, original Cantonese mix, a new feature audio commentary with Asian film expert Frank Chin and Michael Wirth. I'm beginning to really like this duo on commentaries. Frank Chin is great, very knowledgeable about all the actors and who they are, and even their kids and stuff that go on forth. And Michael Wirth used to work on movies, so he actually mentions that he did talk to Joel Schumacher, kind of ripped a scene for Batman Forever from this movie, and he's like, hey, did you take this from this? And he's like, actually, I did. So that's really interesting as well. And then we also have a new audio commentary with cinema experts Mike Leader and Army Venema, who do a lot of these as well. Archival interview with actress Lily Lee. I didn't get a chance to hear their commentary. I really would like to. I wish I had all the time in the world, to be honest, because learning about this stuff is great. But obviously, I can't retain everything anymore. I'm just getting old. But I like this one. Good release. Good special features. Great stuff. Dreadnought. Okay, the next one from 1981 is The Gates of Hell. Now, this is the fucking bizarre one. Letterboxd listed as 78. Internet Movie Database listed as 81, so we're going with that. The Gates of Hell, obviously not to be confused with Lucio Fulci's Gates of Hell. But this is a Taiwanese movie. And in the first, 5 minutes, we just have this skeleton head floating out of a museum and attacking the guy running the museum or somebody, a janitor. And you're just like, okay, that's what we're doing here. Then we cut to a group of about 8 kids going through the mountains for a camping trip, kind of bizarre. It's dubbed in English. It has subtitles as well. It's relatively short, an hour and 16 minutes, if that. I don't know if this is a shortened version. It's a Taiwanese movie. A lot of those Taiwanese movies are co-productions where it's is this Hong Kong, shot in Taiwan? I don't know. There's not much history about this movie. So essentially they're wandering through the woods and it feels very Nightmare Logic, right? Where you're just like, hey, there's a bunch of my friends in this. And they meet this kind of weird guy who steals their food, or he asks for food and then later he steals their food and they're confused who he is because he's wearing a mask. Are you a spirit or yada, yada, yada. It starts pouring rain. The main two, the guy and the girl, get separated from their group of friends. They end up in this abandoned castle. Very Hammer, right? We have this idea, Hammer Universal. It starts raining. You're running to a castle for shelter. You shouldn't fucking be there. And guess what? Boom. There's going to be some sort of monster, creature, whatever, some spirit that you're not supposed to interact with. That's a very tropey thing, especially for, older films. And maybe not so much in 81, but hey, this is a throwback possibly. Maybe they're just getting the memo. So what happens is, and this is such a weird scene, they're wandering around this castle and we see blood drip on this skeleton, right? Maybe it's the same skeleton that escaped the museum. I guess it's supposed to be. And a drop of blood falls on this skeleton. And we do this reverse melt, right? Where it starts to come back to life. And it's growing back and the blood's filling the eye. And then the eyes are in the skeleton, right? And it's stop motion. It's just and starts looking around. And I was like, yes, I laughed out loud because I love that shit, right? So what happens is it brings this vampire back. And this vampire starts to go after the two, right? And there's this really nightmarish scene where the girl's running away and she goes in the basement and she sees all her friends laid out. They're all fucking laying there and she tries to wake them up and they're all vampires. I'm like, oh my God, that's such a nightmare scene. That's so nightmarish, an actual nightmare you'd have. So she's running from all these vampires and everything like that. And then it kind of just eventually she gets away, but she wakes up in the hospital. And I don't want to spoil this movie. It's not, hey, it was all a dream thing either. It's and it ends so fucking weird and dark. You're just like, what is this? But The Gate of Hell, so that's why it's always great to dig deep and watch movies that you just don't wait for the Blu-rays to get released. You don't just wait for it to come to streaming because you'll never see The Gate of Hell. The Gate of Hell is probably never, ever gonna have a Blu-ray. I don't even know if the elements are there. It doesn't seem like it's complete. It seems like there's probably a longer version of the movie somewhere. But there's tons of horror films that people are just going to forget about, they're never going to see. That's why it's good to deep dive in these years and watch a bunch of stuff from the years to kind of explore what we have. The Gate of Hell is one of these bizarre, weird ones, and I really liked it for what it was. I would like some background on it. But going in 81, kind of the weirdest discovery, this is one of the weirdest ones I watched just to know it was there. And also realizing that there's three fucking bizarre remakes. Again, like I said, there's a Rocky Horror remake, a Let Sleeping Corpses Lie remake, and a Friday the 13th remake. So just weird things going on. Gate of Hell is one of the weirdest ones I watched from this year. But check it out if you can. Maybe there's a YouTube video. Maybe I'll try to find something for you guys to watch and link you. Okay, so the Patreon pick this week is The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. That is right. Starring the one, the only, Nicolas Cage. So, okay, this one I had heard about. It's kind of a strange kind of meta picture here. And it stars Nicolas Cage as himself, right? And Nicolas Cage is going through it, He's trying to find the next big role. He's obviously having some trouble connecting with his daughter. And he seems to not know how to connect with her. He loves the films. He loves talking about the films. The one thing I noticed right away was how much I really kind of think I like Nicolas Cage now, and there was a time when I just was uncertain what the fuck he was doing. He was taking all these different roles and stuff like that. Now Nicolas Cage has become such a cult icon, right? He was always kind of a cult actor. He's in a lot of good movies, but he kind of just, I think it was a lot of weird confusion going on with the movies he was in, and nobody knew why he was doing so many movies, and you kind of just register that he just really likes acting. So watching this, he's definitely playing into that. He's definitely kind of talking about that in these movies. I mean, he didn't write the script, but he definitely agreed to what they were doing. And there's parts in this when he's just kind of going on these tirades of talking about film, Dr. Caligari, the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, where you're I kind of feel like Nicolas Cage is an active 100% cinephile, which I love to see because so many people that want to act in film don't love movies. And it always makes me so fucking sad. But seeing Nicolas Cage that adores movies, it just makes me happy. And I know this is a fictional movie, but I feel like there is some truth to it. So he's down on his luck. He just misses out on this big role and he's starting to spiral out of control. And he wants to retire from acting. But he agrees to do this one kind of last gig that David Patrick Harris gets him this gig where he's going to go to, I can't remember, South America somewhere and just kind of hang out with this guy for $1 million. And he's like, fuck it. So he goes there. This guy's a super fan. But this guy had wrote a script. But he's contacted shortly after Nicolas Cage by the CIA that's there. One of which is played by the guy from Mad TV. You guys know him. He played it, popped up on The Hunt. Two CIA agents that tell him, this guy you're with is a head of a drug cartel. And we need you to spy on him and get information because he's got this poor girl kidnapped and we need you to help us. So these two spend the day and night hanging out and bonding and becoming best friends over movies, right? And then they tell him this. So he's really torn about it. They've bonded this best friend moment. And he's playing a double agent here, right? But things get way more complicated as his family ends up having to come here for crazy circumstances. And our drug cartel guy's cousin gets involved. So it gets really insane. It's a comedy first, an action and a drama. There is an amazingly brilliant scene in here where they all take acid. Where Nicolas Cage and his buddy, the supposed drug cartel guy, take acid. And they're flipping out. And one guy's like, the guy who's great in here too, Javi, he's like, why don't we make, they're talking about the movie they want to make together. He's like, why don't we make a political thriller? And he's like, yeah, political thriller, man. And are they watching us? Are they? And he's like, are those guys watching us? And he's like, I don't know. Are they? And they start freaking out. And it's so fucking funny. And they're looking because they're high on acid. And it's one of the best deliveries by this Javi guy. And he looks back at him. He's like, fuck. And it's just so dead on. It's so dead on perfect. Their interactions together are wonderful. He gets to play and make comments about the films he's in, including The Rock and Face Off. And this guy has a huge collection of his own things. It's such a weird kind of meta, self-referential thing. But it was so clever and fun to me. It was just another kind of Nicolas Cage kind of cult movie that I really liked watching. You know, watching a lot of the stuff he's been in lately has been a treat. Mandy was excellent. I love Mandy. He's great in it. Perfectly cast. You know, I feel like Nicolas Cage is one of those guys that a lot of people just don't use him right. If you don't use him right, you know, you're not up to snuff. You know what I mean? But he's great in this. He's great in this. Javi, the actor who plays Javi, is great in this as well. It's very funny, very entertaining, good stuff. I really would recommend this. The action's solid too. But I watch a lot of Hong Kong action films, and it's just never going to hit these do. You know what I'm saying? The Hong Kong action movies hit so much harder than anything else. After you watch Hong Kong action, you're just like, American action, no matter what, you're just like, modern American action, I should say. But I really love The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Excellent movie. And I think that Nicolas Cage got to work through some demons here. And I think that watching him have a hard time relating to people because he's so fucking obsessed with movies and wanting people to love what he loves kind of can be a wake-up call, you know what I mean? It takes a while for a person that loves film, cinephile, to understand that not everyone knows what the hell you're talking about or gives a shit, right? So it can be that way, right? Anyways, love this movie. Really recommend it. Check it out. All right, guys, let's get in these questions, comments, concerns. Ken Coakley, 3959. In the comments section, one of the viewers asked for recommendations for other crime films in the U.S. and crime dramas are my thing, so here are some recommendations. He asked for three. So I gave him three. He said, what are the three you'd want to see most? Or you think would be the best to see that. But I will read them because you have good recommendations for sure. Once Upon a Time in America, it's over 3.5 hours long, but like The Godfather and The Godfather Part II, the time whizzes by. State of Grace, starring Sean Penn, Ed Harris, and Gary Oldman. It's about the Westies in New York. Great movie, by the way. Miller's Crossing, another gem by the Coen brothers. There's also a cameo by Sam Raimi. Bonnie and Clyde, great performances by Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway, Gene Hackman, and Estelle Parsons, who was originally choiced to play Mrs. Voorhees in Friday the 13th. Dillinger, starring Warren Oates, who looked like the real John Dillinger. Dillinger's a favorite of mine. St. Valentine's Day Massacre, starring Jason Robards as Al Capone. It's also directed by Roger Corman. If you don't mind black and white, here are some classics. The Public Enemy, Angels with Dirty Faces, and White Heat, all starring James Cagney. Little Caesar, starring Edward J. Robinson. Scarface 32. 82 and 83. Last but not least, The Town. I'm a Boston native, so I'm a bit biased. Honorable mention, Black Mass. Good choice. I haven't seen all those, but I've seen a lot of the big ones in there. Good stuff. Movie Junkie 84, Reviews 84. I'm only familiar with The Jaws of Satan. I was expecting more of a standard snake movie. I think it's kind of missed out on the potential by trying to be more of a possession movie. That's just my two red cents. And then we have user text. Great job as always. Thank you, Doug Lander. Great video, Dave. Thank you. Nick Mua from Belgium. Can't go wrong with Mark Hamill and Christopher Lee. I think not, sir. Jess Franco sure did work with the best. Thanks for their interesting review for The Shepherd. Someone else's opinion always provides a fresh perspective. Not always, but hopefully I can. Maybe not. Questions. Are there any dude is in prison flicks that aren't hardcore porn, but just a bit sleazy and scary? Huh. Trying to think. I mean, Bad Boys is a good film. I don't know if it's super sleazy. Bad Boys with Sean Penn is a good one. Ghost of the Civil Dead is a good prison movie with guys. I heard the penitentiary movies are really solid kind of prison films. I would go with definitely Bad Boys, Ghost of the Civil Dead. I feel like there's another one I'm forgetting that's a good prison film. You know what? If you're looking for really sleazy ones, what are those kinky movies? Those kind of ones Severn put out. They do have some prison stuff in there as well. Those are really crazy. These like messed up teen drug dramas. They end up in prison a lot. Those are fucking pretty crazy sleazy movies. Uncomfortable shit. Do you think you'd be top dog in a dude's prison flick? I don't know what the hell is going on with that question. I don't know what the fuck they would cast me as. My favorite Jess Franco film is Bloody Judge. How about you? My favorite Jess Franco? That's tough. Jeez. Probably Venus in Furs or She Killed in Ecstasy or Vampiros Lesbos. I think those are probably my favorites, those ones. I think that Bloody Moon is fun, but I think those three that I named are probably my favorites that I've seen. There's probably other ones that I'd like better. I might be forgetting a couple, but those are all really solid Jess Franco movies. See you next week. Great episode as always. And then RMT Music. I own the August Underground DVDs. I can't stand them. They are truly awful movies. Just torture porn for sake of gore. Not a fan. I wish I feel horrible for owning them. Like, that was such a, I don't know what you're getting at. We had this conversation, we talked back and forth, but that's all right, whatever. I mean, to each their own. William Blasco, 1031, no mega cut on the Mortem release. I'm just going to force me to buy that damn box set. Great. Now, I don't know if that Mortem, the Mortem cut is going to be in the box set. We'll have to wait and see, honestly. There's going to be extra features on the box set, too, from my understanding. Ilk Vomit 88, while I had no idea Mark Hamill starred in a movie directed by Jess Franco, the force is strong with this movie. You got Count Dooku and Luke Skywalker here. Hashtag the more you know. Nice picking up Dreadnought. That's another great Yoon Bio flick. And then The Simpson Guy 360, love your interviews on the first Underground on Blu-ray, made me appreciate the movie a lot more. I'm looking forward to checking out the special features on Mortem. Not sure if I'm going to watch the movie again, though. That one is really tough watch, no doubt. So before we get into the update, I think that I'm going to do the Patreon drawings now, before I turn this off. Now you guys got to watch me do absolutely everything, right? But I'm going to do the Patreons here, and then we'll hop into the update. It's all falling out here. So five movies. I'm trying to break this up in the bottom. Well, that one fell out, so we're using it. What is it? Jim Simon, Let Me Die a Woman. I know Synapse put that out. Documentary about sex change, old one. I don't know if it's any good. Not heard really many people talk about it. John Wilhelm, The Pope's Exorcist. I love Russell Crowe. Hope he's unhinged as hell in it. Like Unhinged. And then we have John Wilhelm, Skinwalker 2021. Not seen that one, so that's three. What else we got in here? Tom Brooker, Vamp. I haven't seen Vamp in years. 86. Always remember liking that one. Oh, we got one that fell out of the bag. And Tom Brooker, another Tom Brooker, Wanted Dead or Alive. And we're talking about the Rutger Hauer movie, right? By Gary Sherman. That's excellent. Those are good picks, man. I'm happy to watch all five of those ones for sure. But I'm always happy to watch most of them. Anyways, let's get into this update. All right, let's hop into this update. First up is the 4K of My Bloody Valentine. Great timing, because I'm doing 1981. I did watch this already, but I'm going to rewatch it and have a couple guests on for My Bloody Valentine, 1981. Good film. Obviously one of the best standalone slasher movies, Canadian classic. Yeah, good stuff. And then next up, we have from the Kino Order, Needful Things on 4K. Buy Now, Pay Later. Stephen King adaptation. It's been years since I watched this. This actually has the longer version on there, which I think I did see years ago, which actually makes me very, very happy. It has the regular in 4K, and then we have the 191-minute television cut in Blu-ray. Ed Harris, Max von Sydow, J.T. Walsh. Remember a good film on there. It's been a while. We have the special edition of White Buffalo, J. Lee Thompson movie with Charles Bronson, Will Sampson. Really good film. Always enjoyed this one. Kind of a Jaws with a White Buffalo. Really good cast, too. Yeah, I picked this one up because I think it has a new master on there, new commentary at least. Big fan of the movie. Had the old release. We have Will Penny. This is a good one. Kino put this out. Really great cast. Charlton Heston, Donald Pleasance, a bunch of people in here. Bruce Dern, Matt Clark. This is a good one. This is actually a real good one. Directed by Tom Grease, and his son John Grease has a very small role in here. He'd go on to be in stuff like Friday Night 2 and Monster Squad. Then next up we have UFO Incident. This one just seems so bizarre. Estelle Parsons and James Earl Jones. Now I think this is probably based on the Benny and Barney Hill story. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But this was listed as a horror film from 1975. I had not heard anyone talk about this movie. I don't know if it is listed on that. I don't know if it's based on... I don't know much about this. But I just saw it. I was like, I don't know this movie. So I grabbed it. Then we have Remo Williams with Fred Ward. I saw part of this on television, I think. I've heard of this one for years. Kind of a cult movie. Supposed to be pretty good. Love Fred Ward. This looks fun. Wilford fucking Brimley on the back there. Of course, got to get it for Wilford. Next up, we have Clockers by Spike Lee. It's a classic movie. Great movie. Harvey Keitel. Keith David's in here. I love Keith David. Yeah, I really like this film. It's been years. This is one that I saw a long, long time ago. And always remembered it. Finally picked up the Blu-ray. Another crime movie I saw a long, long time ago, and always remembered it, Laws of Gravity, with Peter Green, Edie Falco. Yeah, I remember liking this one. I only saw it the one time, but it was really interesting. Low-budget kind of crime film. Crazy they put it out. You know, I guess it does have a cult following, so it'd be nice to revisit. Then we have Treasure of the Four Crowns, Supervision 3D. This looks absolutely bonkers, ridiculous, fun nonsense. Who did this one? Same guy who did Blind Man, the Spaghetti Western, if I'm not mistaken, Fernando Baldi. So hopefully this is fun. It looks fun. The trailer won me over. I was like, what should I get? It's a canon movie. I was like, that's the one when I was going through their sales stuff. Then we have Kill a Dragon. I picked this up because the cast, Jack Palance, Fernando Llamas, and Aldo Rey. I mostly picked it up for Jack Palance and Aldo Rey. Fernando Llamas is probably a guy I know, but I'd have to see him. But this looked fun. Big fan of Jack Palance, and Aldo Rey is crazy, but I enjoy watching him. Yeah, so picked this up. Good price. Next up, we have 21 Hours at Munich. Good cast here. William Holden. Franco Nero. And I saw in the trailer a small little role by David Hess. Got to be around the same time that Nero and Hess did Hitchhike together in 77, so that's cool. I'm going to pick up anything with William Holden and Franco Nero. So there we go. Then we have The Hound of Baskerville, which is a great, story here. It's been done so many freaking times. Sherlock Holmes story here. There's a Hammer version. And I've not seen this one. This is directed by Paul Morrissey, of all people. Paul Morrissey would do Blood for Dracula, Flesh for Frankenstein, Flesh, Heat, Trash, all those movies. So, yeah, this should be interesting. Good stuff. Code Red Kino. And then not last for my Code Red here, we have Guana, Cult of the Damned. I would have picked this up a long time ago, but I thought it was the same movie as Cult of the Damned, which I already had. But no, this one is another story about Jonestown, another movie. So, Stuart Whitman as basically Jim Jones is my understanding. That looks insane. Who else is in there? John Ireland, Bradford Dillman, Joseph Cotten. I was just talking about Joseph Cotten. That's right. Joseph Cotten's in so many movies, man. And then next up, we have Dirty O'Neill, The Love Life of a Cop. This looked like sleazy, trashy kind of weirdness, so I picked it up. Good price, of course. Yeah, Code Red and then Kino on here. So that's for my Kino order, and then we're going to get into the Vinegar Syndrome and partner label stuff. First up is going to be The Defilers, Adults Only. Also has exclusive The Complete Story of the Defilers, plus A Smell of Honey, A Swallow of Brine. Now, these I think I had on DVD a long time ago, but now we got them on Blu-ray here. Hopefully that's pretty good. What's next? We have Visitors from the Arcana Galaxy, and this is a Deaf Crocodile release. That was Egg for the previous one. That's a very cool slipcover there. That looks insane. So yeah, lots of good stuff. 81. I'll watch this for 1981. It's definitely a cult film. Definitely not horror, probably more sci-fi, but definitely going to watch it. Why as well for 81. Then we have Night Chills. This is a Saturn's Core. A role-playing with vengeance. Role-playing with vengeance. So don't know much about this one. Saturn's Core keeps putting out a lot of strange films that I really don't know very well. It looks pretty cheap, but hey, it never stopped me from enjoying a movie before, right? Then we have an umbrella here, Strike of the Panther, and I think it's a Day of the Panther, double feature here. These look fun. Oh, I am going to address that. I did notice there, I'm having some issues with, like, the memory card not filling. I'll have to buy some new memory cards. They're just not holding. They, like, will cut out. So that's why you're probably seeing me look a little baffled during the video sometimes, or switch camera angles randomly. It's because one's cutting out here or there. I don't know what the hell's going on. I'll figure it out. But sorry about that. Just letting you guys know. And then we have A Hitman's Hero, a Mark Savage film. Now, Mark Savage is an Australian director, and he directed a handful of movies. There was a box set, like Marauders. I think this is AKA The Marauders, or something. This is another movie, The Hitman's Pro. This was also has an alternate title, which I had the DVD on. Now, Mark Savage did a few movies, so he's got a good following, so I never watched his DVDs that I had, but now I'm buying his Blu-rays, of course. That's just my MO. I feel like I did see one of his movies. Anyways, pick that up. And then here we have one of the VSL line, and this is the Enrique Gomez, the films of Enrique Gomez Vandillo. And how many are on here? There's Lux Muerte en la Playa, Death on the Beach, Johnny Chincano, and Fernando Salvede, or Savage Summer. So we'll just go with that. It's a little bit easier for me to say. These look interesting. Don't know much about them, but yeah. It's a lot of good Mexican films. So these Mexicans are Spanish movies, to be honest. Not 100% sure, but I know that they have been putting out some... This is Mexican genre cinema. They have been putting out some Mexican movies, and there's some really good stuff from Mexico, to be honest, that really doesn't get a lot of releases, so finally we're getting it. Then we have the VSA here, in Eternal Combat. Yeah, Hong Kong kind of looks like fantasy, kind of whimsy kind of movie deal, if I can get it out of here. I saw the trailer for this one, and I had heard about this one before. This looks like a lot of fun, and it's got Anthony Wong in it. If you put Anthony Wong in a movie, I'm going to buy it. So, there you go. Then we get into the VS, the regular Vinegar Syndrome stuff here. Ghost Nursing. I like it. Whoa, look at that slipcover. Mutant baby on there. Love it. 1982. Cool. Be watching this one shortly for 82. What I get after I get out of 81. I'm making my way, guys. I'm 120 into 81. So then we have Arnold, which I've heard about for years. I'm always happy to see this kind of stuff that you hear about for years get a release. Stella Stevens, Roddy McDowell. This looks so bizarre. This looks fun. 1973. Good stuff. Curse of the Screaming Dead. This is the same director of Night of Horror, which is funny because Night of Horror is also included on here. We also, like I said, have a, I think, HD remastered version of Night of Horror, which is absolutely terrible. But I'm willing to rewatch it in HD, and I will watch Curse of the Screaming Dead. I'm a sucker for zombies. I've never seen that one. I think it was a trauma. Those two were distributed by Trauma. Then Evil Judgment is the last one. I've never seen this one. Don't know much about it. What year is this one? 84? Man, I don't know if I'm familiar with this. A lot of these titles are really generic. They're like, Evil Below, Evil Judgment, Final Judgment. So I'm not 100% off I know anything about Evil Judgment here. So then we also got my little... This is for Christian from Exploding Heads. We got this little Spookies pendant of the Goblin. Christian Luciani is a huge fan of the Spookies. If you ever communicate with him or talk to him, bring up the Spookies. Be like, man, I know you love the Spookies. Talk to him about it. Tell him how great it is. He'll really appreciate it. But I'm going to get back to the video, guys.
Thank you very much, guys, for watching. And as always, have a good one.